and a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X a little bit later this morning due to some travel complications yesterday. However, we are back. Hopefully you had a great weekend. Thanks for spending some time with us on this Monday morning. I've got a very interesting article that I had the opportunity to read yesterday off over at the Washington Post, of all places. The headline is this: Trump vows, and the headline's, of course, it's a Washington Post headline, so the headline is very much politically loaded, very much politically biased. But going through the details of the article, things change pretty rapidly. So here's the headline: Trump vowed to help the NC Mountains rebuild after Helene. Frustration remains. So that's the headline over at the Washington Post, which is trying to do one simple thing: take the failures of the previous administration, because I'll remind you, Hurricane Helene happened in September of last year, squarely at the end of the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris White House, the Harris-Biden administration. Trump did vow to help the North Carolina mountains, and that help is being delivered as we speak this morning. But of course, that ridiculous headline from the Washington Post. So the headline is one thing. The story reads a very different way, and it's by Brianna Sachs and Jake Springs. So let's get into the details, because I think there's a couple of very interesting things in here calling out not only the Biden administration, but the Roy Cooper administration. A two-lane highway in western North Carolina winds through a landscape littered with crushed cars, houses knocked off their foundations, and thousands of downed trees. Every few miles next to a washed-out bridge, signs in MAGA red make the same plea: Trump, make this bridge great again. 5 months after Hurricane Helene, about 300 privately owned bridges in the county have yet to be fixed. While Americans typically rely on a mix of state and federal aid in the wake of a disaster, the recovery for many here has become akin to a personal test of their relationship with President Donald Trump. The lingering frustration across parts of 27 hurricane-hit counties in North Carolina's Appalachian Mountain region speaks to the complexity of rebuilding in a place dotted with federal emergency management centers. But people say they feel abandoned. Trump and his allies have blasted President Joe Biden's response, feeding an online frenzy that has portrayed FEMA's response as a disaster. So it's just an online frenzy portraying it as a disaster. Just a, you know, three paragraphs into this article, where it's feeding an online frenzy that has portrayed FEMA's response as a disaster. That is an inaccurate assessment of what's going on or what went on. FEMA, the situation with FEMA was not just portrayed online as a disaster. It was an absolute disaster. The federal response to Helene was completely unacceptable. Yes, it is a complicated geographic region of, I'll say, the country. An area where a natural disaster, the likes of which had not been seen, some say ever, at least going back to the early 1900s, 1912, there's a really bad flood and storm out in western North Carolina. So at least 100 years, if not in modern history. So yes, complications in regards to that, sure. But FEMA's lackluster response, FEMA's inability to communicate with families that they were supposedly helping, as they were, you know, kicking people out of hotels, not extending vouchers, yet not telling them that they weren't extending vouchers, telling the people staying, yes, you're good to stay, then telling the hotel operators, no, you got to kick these people out. It was an absolute disaster from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And anybody that says otherwise is either an idiot or is purposefully lying to cover their own ass, to try and provide some shade for the federal government, provide some shade for FEMA. The stories are real. They exist. You can go on Facebook. You can go on X and see the firsthand accounts of individuals that were posting in real time as they were dealing with this arm of the federal government known as FEMA. Robin Ollis, who grew up here and runs a local horseback riding company, organized a group called Bridges for Avery, referring to Avery County, because there's been limited assistance for rebuilding private infrastructure. She said that the signs were an attempt to get some attention before Trump visited last month, a few days after he took office. She told the Washington Post, quote, "There was a lot of desperation here and a lot hurt at the time when he came and when those signs went up. The people that have been suffering from the storm, really, there was so much anticipation from Trump to come in." After the hurricane, Trump, Elon Musk, and other figures took to social media, spreading a mix of false claims and true stories of hardships from desperate residents as they criticized the Biden administration. So, a mix of false claims, but some true stories of hardships in there too. Had to get that in, of course. On Musk's X, regular folks quickly became go-to news sources as well as anti-FEMA megaphones. And disillusioned liberals and moderates began looking to Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance to make them whole again. And so I found this to be very interesting. It, you know, talks about the response, criticism of the Biden administration, and says that there was an anti-FEMA megaphone. I don't think the megaphone was anti-FEMA. I think the megaphone was critical of the response. I find this so bizarre in the staging of the left, and I'll use one of my favorite analogies ever, sports. If you're critical of the sports team that you like, whether it's an NBA team, a college team, a professional baseball team, whatever, if you don't like something that the head coach or the GM or one of the players is doing, you criticize that if you're a rabid sports fan. Does that make you anti that sports team? I don't think so. I can speak for myself, somebody who's highly critical of the teams I follow. I'm not anti those teams. I'm critical. I want things to improve. I want things to be better. But the Washington Post stages it as an anti-FEMA megaphone, calling out the failures of the federal government and shining a light on what was a disastrous response to the western half of our state, I don't think is anti-FEMA. Now, in the weeks and months since that, is there anti-FEMA sentiment from individuals in the western half of the state? Of course. They've had to deal with an unbelievable amount of bureaucracy and nonsense coming from the federal government. But it's the online megaphone is not anti-FEMA. It's pro-accountability. It's looking for these people to be made whole again from the federal government that they don't have a choice whether they fund or not. It's always an important key here that I make sure to bring up. The individuals that were relying and are relying and continue to rely on what's going on in Western North Carolina, they don't have a choice whether they pay their taxes and get good relief and get good results from FEMA. That money is taken from them every time they get paid. And so they expect, they demand, as they should, high quality grade A service, of which they were not getting from FEMA. That's poor staging there from the Washington Post, but a left-wing rag, so no surprise. On January 24th, just days after his inauguration, Trump traveled to North Carolina. He said FEMA had failed to do its job, floating the idea of making the agency go away and giving the money directly to the states. He repeated his campaign promise to accelerate the recovery efforts, signing an executive order to speed up roadwork and expediting housing relief for displaced survivors. Shortly afterwards, the interim head of FEMA, the transportation secretary, and others visited North Carolina, shoveling up muck and listening to survivors. Sean Hendricks, who we spoke to back about a month or so ago, a survivalist and former operations manager for YouTuber Mr. Beast, was a key reason. Before September the 27th, Hendricks had never been in a disaster. Then he saw what Helene had done to a huge swath of his beloved state, and within days, he was driving his Dodge pickup truck over blown-out bridges, delivering Starlink satellite internet devices to overwhelmed fire chiefs and emergency managers, and working with farmers to drone-drop baby food over mountains to cut off families. A few days later, Hendricks tweeted at Musk asking him to make Starlink services, quote, free for the next 30 days in the disaster zone. Musk retweeted Hendricks' post to his millions of followers and agreed. So there you go. You've got exactly what the response was. Wasn't FEMA, wasn't the federal government, wasn't the state government. It was private individuals like Sean Hendricks, who I've had the pleasure to chat with over the last couple of months and joined us here on the show, talking about the firsthand accounts of what's going on in the western half of our state. Complaints about FEMA always follow disasters, says the Washington Post. As the nation's lead disaster response agency, FEMA has a specific but often misunderstood role to provide funding, coordinate resources, and help state and local officials navigate a complex web of programs and resources. Why is it a complex web of programs and resources? Yes, FEMA has a couple of jobs. Their biggest, yeah, is absolutely correct, according to the Washington Post, and I agree with them. FEMA's job is to coordinate with state and local governments. That is true. But the Washington Post says the quiet part out loud. Navigating a complex web of programs and resources, that's the issue. It shouldn't have to be a complex web of programs and resources. It should be a relatively, and of course, you're talking about a natural disaster. You're talking about billions of dollars. You're talking about information that is changing dramatically in the couple of days after the storm. So there's going to be some issues. There's going to be some complexity. There's going to be some issues. Nobody's arguing that. The bigger problem, the Washington Post doesn't seem to wrap their head around, the complex web of programs and resources. That's why Trump has made his comments about getting rid of FEMA. Because it seems in many cases, they are providing more of a roadblock than providing any sort of solutions or help to the individuals in the western half of our state. FEMA was on the ground even before the storm hit, said Amber Silver, an emergency management expert at the University of Albany, calling it a common misperception that they were late in coming in or they didn't get certain parts of the state. Helene's sprawl made the response logistically complex, especially since some mountain communities and other places in Appalachia are extremely difficult to access. Another potential obstacle was that North Carolina never appointed a disaster recovery coordinator to take charge of communicating with federal agencies. Ah! So the old issue, and I brought this up many a times. Trump talks about gutting and changing FEMA and turning it into essentially just a block grant clearinghouse, meaning that a natural disaster hits, FEMA starts writing checks to the state, and then the state is responsible for relief. And while that sounds good on paper and for many other places like our neighbors in South Carolina, where they have a track record of dealing with hurricanes and dealing with them in an efficient and timely manner, that sounds great. Just give the money to the states. They are on the ground. They know the people on the ground. They've got the infrastructure. They have the geographical knowledge. Let them handle it. It's a great idea. However, North Carolina has a very checkered past with dealing with hurricane relief. I'll remind you of the entity known as NCOR, the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, which was dealing with and continues to deal with hurricanes Matthew and Florence, which hit the state in 2016 and 2018, the eastern half of our state. Many of you lived through Matthew and Florence here in Wilmington. And the state, under the direction of Democrat Governor Roy Cooper, miserably failed the people of eastern North Carolina in regards to hurricane relief. NCOR is a bloated, useless organization that, as we speak this morning, there is still 1,000-plus families that are not in their homes because NCOR has mismanaged their money, mismanaged their timeline, has completely failed in their singular goal, providing hurricane relief from those two storms to folks in the eastern half of North Carolina. And so when Trump talks about gutting FEMA, turning it into this clearinghouse for money to the states, I think the idea is great, but boy, does it give me some serious heartache knowing and dealing with and covering the past failures of this state under Democrat administrations in regards to relief. So going back to the article, another potential obstacle was that North Carolina never appointed a disaster recovery coordinator under Roy Cooper to take charge of communicating with federal agencies, as FEMA recommends, according to a former top management official. William Ray, the state's director of the agency, confirmed that, saying that officials decided to take a different approach. Natalie Simpson, an emergency management expert with the University of Buffalo, said that she was shocked that the state did not appoint a disaster response czar, and said that this could help explain the uneven response. She told the Washington Post this: "If there was a genuine problem with FEMA's response, like not penetrating fast enough into the affected areas, somebody that the state appointed as the czar would have been sounding that alarm earlier. If FEMA was guilty of anything, the state of North Carolina is equally guilty of it." And I think she's right. The previous administration under Roy Cooper is absolutely guilty of as many of the same issues that FEMA are. Now, they don't call him out by name, of course, because we know Roy Cooper is going to be running in the Democrat Senate primary next year. The Washington Post knows that. The editors that went over this story know that. So they don't call out Roy Cooper. They don't even mention that there was a Democrat governor at the time. Whenever you've heard me say Roy Cooper or Democrat governor, that's me injecting that into the story, because the Washington Post did not. Because these couple of sentences right here from Natalie Simpson over at the University of Buffalo is incredibly damning for Roy Cooper. He failed the people of Western North Carolina. And I'll say this before we keep going. To Josh Stein's credit, while I didn't vote for the man, I don't agree with probably 99% of the things that he agrees with in terms of his political ideology and philosophy, he has stepped up in regards to hurricane relief. His Grow NC office has been more effective and more transparent in just the last couple of months than we saw with NCOR over 6+ years under the previous governor. And it makes sense, because Josh Stein knows kind of what's on the line here. He understands that he cannot have the same issues that Roy Cooper did in regards to hurricane relief. It will be politically detrimental to him if he wants to run for governor again, which he likely will want to do in 4 years. He understands that. He's not a stupid guy. He doesn't have stupid people around him. He knows very clearly what's going on. It wasn't until early January that newly elected Governor Josh Stein appointed a leadership team to oversee the recovery efforts in Western North Carolina. Diane Criswell, the FEMA administrator through the Biden administration, said, quote, "Thousands of personnel were in place before landfall to include search and rescue teams, hospital assessment teams, and incident coordinators." She said during President Biden's administration, he stressed the need to quickly and to respond quickly and support communities in their recoveries by removing barriers. That's exactly what we did during the response to Hurricane Helene. I think Diane Criswell's assessment there is a little off the ball. I don't know that that's exactly what FEMA did. There were, again, a lot of issues, and the Washington Post even noted that there was a mixture of that online, noting the big issues that took place. Since the disaster, FEMA has poured nearly $800 million into North Carolina's recovery. About half of that funding has gone to 156,000 households for rental assistance, home repairs, and other reliefs. Will Ray, speaking of FEMA, said, quote, "They were here on the ground with us since the beginning, and they were here with us all the way through the response. In every response and recovery effort, we wish that things had gone faster, but that's the nature of disaster response." Although many people said that they were helped by the agency in 15 weeks of driving across the state from his home in Greenville, Sean Hendricks said he saw just two FEMA workers. And to him and to some other residents, all the federal rules and red tape have left people floundering in dire financial situations and unacceptable living conditions. A spokesperson at the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees FEMA, echoed Hendricks, saying in a statement that the Biden administration's response to Helene was, quote, completely unacceptable. Without elaborating, the spokesperson said that since Trump took office, the department has sped up FEMA's process for delivering aid to North Carolina and highlighted efforts by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to remove debris from the road and waterways. And we've seen that take place. So that's the article over at the Washington Post, which I'll throw in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. If you'd like to financially support the program, get access to some bonus content. That's over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. There's some other things in here as well. There's some other interesting details, but for brevity this morning, I don't want to read through the entire article. But again, just kind of doing this broad summary, this kind of broad overview of what's going on out there. You had a weak, useless response at the start from FEMA. You had an agency, which of course the Washington Post does not put in their article. They put nothing in there about FEMA ignoring homes that had Trump signs on them. They put nothing in there about the individual who, or the individuals who actively discriminated against individuals that voted for Donald Trump or were going to be voting for Donald Trump. Again, this storm happened in September. That's just gone from the article. Just ignore that part. That's not in there at all. And so the real question going forward is going to be a big one. And it's going to be, what does the federal government and what does disaster relief look like long term? And because I see both sides of it. Obviously, when you've got anything federal going on, inherently, just based on the fact that it is originating from the federal government, that is going to lead to inefficiencies, red tape, and bureaucracy. That's just the nature of the federal government doing almost anything. So that, of course, is going to be a consistent. But then you've got the flip side of it. What do you do if you gut FEMA, you cut out as much of the federal response and just give money to states, and states like North Carolina are incapable of dealing with it? Now, some might argue that's okay because you have a greater effect over your local government. And while that's true, I'm not worried about the political implications right now. And yes, so you can vote out your lawmakers in the state legislature every 2 years. You can vote for a new governor every 4 years. I get that. But we're talking about people's lives. We're talking about the economic feasibility of dozens of towns and communities in the western half of our state. We don't have 2 years for people to go, this North Carolina response agency failed miserably. We'll wait 2 years and vote for somebody else, and then the problem will be fixed. We don't have that kind of time. We need the response to be fast and efficient. And again, there are playbooks that work. You know, Hurricane Matthew and Florence, those storms also affected South Carolina pretty heavily, especially Hurricane Florence. You don't hear the horror stories in South Carolina like you do in Eastern North Carolina. They have been and were capable of providing hurricane relief, getting individuals either back in their homes through rehabilitation or rebuilding their homes completely. They were able to do that. That was their goal. That was their mission. They succeeded. So there is a playbook that works. You can go look at Florida with the devastating hurricanes that seemingly they see pretty much every year, at least one. They're capable of dealing with relief. Governor Ron DeSantis and the Florida legislature have done a phenomenal job at dealing with these storms. So there are playbooks. There are instances where states can prove and have shown that, yes, we can handle this very important task, this very complicated task, because it is complicated. Hurricane relief is not just writing a blank check to a homeowner and saying, see you later. Here's a check for your home value, $150,000. We'll see you next time. That's not hurricane relief. We wish it was that simple, but it's not. It's a very, very complicated task, and I don't mean to dumb it down and try and act like, oh, this is something easy. All you got to do is, you know, snap your finger and hurricane relief is solved. I know that's not the case. Very well aware. But what we've seen in this state is not sufficient going forward. Now, as I mentioned, to Josh Stein's credit, things appear, at least off the bat, and it's only been a couple of weeks, but I'll watching this stuff in real time, I've got to look at it objectively. He's done a significantly better job with the Governor's Office of Recovery for Western North Carolina, GRO-NC, than Roy Cooper and NCOR did. And I hope that continues. And part of that is going to be the legislature is not going to allow, at least they have said, they're not going to allow what happened in the eastern half of the state to be repeated in the west. Lawmakers are going to have a much stronger microscope looking into the issues of the GRO-NC office compared to what they did with NCOR. I strongly believe that's going to be the case. So a very interesting article. Again, I'll throw it up in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. One other interesting thing I wanted to bring to your attention this morning. We spent a lot of time last week talking about, of course, Trump's joint address to Congress, in which Democrats acted a complete and total fool. And it's brought forward a very interesting question. What do the Democrats do going forward? How do the Democrats, a party that just had a very, very rough election cycle in November of last year, contrary to what the ladies of The View say, who played that Stephen A. Smith clip, which I thought was fantastic, contrary to what Democrats will try to tell you, well, we only lost by like 1.4%. They lost. They lost the White House. They lost the Senate. They could not gain majorities in the House. They did not have a very good election cycle in November of last year. And so there's a serious question being asked. What happens and what do the Democrats do going forward? This has been an interesting topic over the last couple of weeks. And lo and behold, the Democrats are hiring a far-left progressive to work in regards to the Democrat Party. This article over at Fox News, it says, quote, as calls continue to grow for the Democrat Party to moderate following a disappointing performance in the November election, the Democrat National Committee announced the hiring of an executive director with a history of promoting far-left ideologies. The DNC announced the hiring of Roger Lau, an executive director, in a press release last week highlighting his long career, which includes working on the campaigns of Senator Elizabeth Warren, or aka Pocahontas, as you might know her. A Fox News digital review found multiple instances of Luau associating with progressive causes, including signing onto a letter in 2020 claiming that the United States is built on racism and genocide. Ah, perfect strategy for the Democrat Party. The letter signed by him and over 100 other people reads as follows, quote, "Our country was built on the foundation of racism, ranging from the genocide of indigenous people, slavery, racial profiling of young men of color, and a criminal justice system that tears families apart." That letter signed by the new executive director of the Democrat Party back in June of 2022. The letter also announced support for a 10-point plan to address police violence and racial justice, which contained measures including a commission on structural racism and declaring racism a, quote, public health emergency. Roger Lau's adherence to Black Lives Matter platforms at the time made its way into one of Senator Elizabeth Warren's speeches, according to an ABC News report in 2020 that said Roger Lau was behind putting hidden Black Lives Matter messages into the senator's DNC speech. Roger Lau can be seen taking part in a video posted on the YouTube page of Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, who recently sparked controversy by offering condolences to a family of a man shot while trying to stab an innocent bystander in a Chick-fil-A parking lot that warned about a white supremacy culture. Roger Lau's resume also includes opposition to a resolution that condemned the Chinese Communist Party for misleading the world on the origin and spreading of coronavirus. Lau's previously served as the DNC Deputy Executive Director during the 2024 presidential election cycle. That, of course, was where Vice President Kamala Harris was defeated by President Trump, and he has served in that role since 2021. Now, in a press release announcing his promotion to the full executive director, says, quote, "The DNC is laser focused on equipping Democrats across the country with the tools they need to win, and I'm honored to support Chair Martin in this critical work. We're working in the opposition party. The work of the DNC is more important than ever. This team will leverage the vast infrastructure that we've built within the Democrat National Committee and our state parties while meeting this moment by deepening our partnerships, strengthening grassroots organizing, and turbocharging messaging to win elections." Fox News Digital reached out to the DNC for comment, and the DNC did not respond to that and did not have anything to say. So, this I found to be highly, highly interesting. And what you are going to see over the next 2 years, and I say 2 years, obviously Trump is going to be in office for four, but ahead of the midterm elections is going to be fascinating. So one of the things that I'm going to be keeping a very, very close eye on is the Democrat Party. And not at the high levels, or not in the public levels, I should say. Yes, we'll keep an eye on what Democrat elected officials are saying. That stuff is important. But really, where the rubber meets the road is going to be the stuff behind the scenes. And I guess from this hiring decision, taking a guy who is a far-left progressive radical, promoting and appointing him to this position as the full executive director of a party that has a huge brand identity problem right now, a party that is failing to meet the needs of average, everyday citizens of the United States, is going to be very interesting to follow. The Democrat Party, in my estimation, has about 14 months or so to try and rebuild themselves. They've got about 14 months to rebrand, to tell the American people we're the best party with the ideas. We have the best policies. We have the best execution. We have the best platform going forward. Elect us in 2026. I would estimate they've got about 14 months to get that done. And it's not just like 14 months, flip the switch, and you're a new party. It needs to be a gradual process over the next 14 months. And I don't seemingly think it's going to happen. If last Tuesday night's joint address to Congress was any indication of where Democrats are going to place their chips over the next 2 years, it seems like they might be doomed for the midterms. Because what we saw Tuesday night, the reaction from Democrats in Washington, D.C. to Trump's joint address to Congress, which for all intents and purposes was a State of the Union, was abysmal. Their unwillingness to stand for a 11-year-old boy with cancer? Disgusting. Their unwillingness to clap and to rise and stand on their feet for family members that have dealt with unimaginable heartaches and pain at the hands of their policies in regards to the open border? is just an absolute abomination. Al Green wagging his cane like a mid-1800s political duel taking place at the local train station somewhere in Middle America. Well, what are these guys thinking? The Democrat Party is in a complete and total free fall implosion right now. And seemingly with them appointing and hiring up and promoting a far left radical individual to become the executive director of their party screams danger if I were a Democrat. I would not think that this is a good thing going forward. But what do I know? I'm just a lonely old podcaster. What do I know about politics? What do I know about the temperature of the American public? I watched the same election that these guys watched in November. I watched Trump win 7 of 7 swing states. I watched his messaging like no tax on tips, cleaning up crime in cities, providing a safe and prosperous America. I watched that message resonate with tens of millions of American people. And the end result was an overwhelming election win for the president, winning the popular vote for a Republican the first time in 20 years. So I guess we know nothing, guys. The great listeners of the Nick Craig Show, we don't know what we're talking about. The Democrats truly have all the answers. They know what's going on. So that's something that I'm going to make sure I kind of keep an eye on the undercurrent, what's going on with the Democrat Party, and I'll continue to bring that coverage and these various stories to the air right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, a little bit of a shorter program this morning, just on a personal note, got in about 2 o'clock this morning, had some flight delays out of the illustrious Charlotte International Airport. So the reason we weren't live at 7 o'clock, the reason that the podcast is coming out a little bit later is due to the fact of some of those travel delays. But nevertheless, Monday morning here and another successful show. We'll do it again tomorrow morning. We've got another busy week taking place in North Carolina, another busy week in Washington, D.C. as well. We'll keep an eye on all of it. Don't forget, you can support the show over at patreon.com/Nick Craig and check out the podcast 24/7 wherever you get your shows. Thanks for joining us for a Monday edition. We're back tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.